Dan Shulman, our play-by-play voice in Sportsnet, joins us. You didn't pick him as player game, did you? You
went off the board. I was being intentionally difficult last night. So.
Yeah, you invented a new phrase as I listened to you and Wilner and Chris LaRue and Ben Wagner talk about this. Yeah. You said you're cyclically neutral.
Cycle neutral.
Explain that to me.
Yeah. So Wilner likes cycles, and Wilner and I have had this back and forth, friendly thing over the years. So both Blue Jay cycles, if I'm not mistaken, are when guys could have had doubles but settled for singles in the last at bat.
Right.
And I maintain that two doubles, a triple, and a homer is better than a cycle. I maintain that a single, a double, and two homers is better than a cycle. Because it is. but a cycle is just unique. I think it's a great night. It's a great feat. I just don't kind of lose my cookies over it because
you know what, Danny? We're going to have to call you back. We got a bad line. It's a hell of a way to start a Friday.
You left me hanging there. Because of what? Because what? Doesn't lose his cookies because what?
It's...
Interesting point, though, about the cycle.
That's like one of those things that's a bad time to get cut off. It's like, and then I told him to go, and then it cuts off. That's
yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
And the next morning,
I told him
he
was so full. Anyhow, is he back?
Are you cycle neutral as well?
Oh, okay. We're going to try his house line. I just want to find out why about losing his cookies. Because, that's a little disconcerting.
It's an interesting point, though.
It is, and
you got a chance to get a double and you settle for a single just to get that, check that one off your bucket list of
right.
achievements as a MLB-er.
Yeah, no, and he's talking about it was the legendary Jeff Fry hit for cycle here with the Blue Jays and stopped running at first base. Here we go. Yeah, when we last, sorry about that, Dan, but you've left an entire city on edge because when we last... When we left you, you were in the process, apparently, of losing your cookies, which,
No, I don't lose my cookies over a cycle. I think it's a great night, but, for instance, Matt Carpenter had three homers and two doubles a few weeks ago.
Yes.
That's a better night, way better night, but it is a terrific evening, but I think it's remembered more because of its uniqueness than anything else. So, yes, I know I didn't pick Mookie Betts as player of the game. It's not like we go down and give the guy a wristwatch or anything like that, but, Mookie's doing okay.
I was going to say, Mookie may get something this year.
He may be all right, yeah. But I was just kind of being playfully difficult last night, and the Blue Jays won the game. Smoke had three hits. I thought he made some nice defensive plays. He threw out a runner at second base on a 1-3-6, and he's swinging the bat great. But it was more, I knew I was just being difficult, and I was outvoted 3-1. The other the Three Stooges all voted for Mookie Betts. So.
Well, and Dan, Michael Tracos here, and when you're talking about Mookie Betts and the cycle, like the two seem to go hand in hand. Like I'm surprised that was his first one of his career, I believe, but he's almost the epitome. Like that's what you think of when you think of the cycle, a player like Betts who can stretch doubles into triples, who can hit for distance, who can spray the ball wherever he wants.
Yeah, he's as good a combination of speed and power. Mike Trout obviously is up there too, but in order to be a good cycle candidate, you need speed and power, or you need a lot of luck. And Wilner was reading off the guys who had cycles against the Red Sox before, or as a Red Sox before, and Rich Gedman was one of them. And Jeff, you remember Rich Gedman, like left-hand hitting catcher, slow, and he had a cycle. So, like, it can happen. And, again, it can be kind of a fluky thing. But to your point, Michael, I mean, Mookie Betts is – he's not a good player. He's a sensational player. Yes, Mike Trout is – I think he's still the best player in baseball until somebody takes the belt away from him. But if anybody's going to take the belt, it's going to be Mookie Betts. And here's the crazy thing about Mookie Betts. He's 5'9", 170. Mm. Like, think about that. He's not 5'11", 185, never mind 6'2", 230. He's 5'9", 170, and he's one of the two or three best players in the sport. It's crazy.
Yeah, your friends at ESPN on Sunday night, Matt and Jessica and Alex Rodriguez were talking about him as an MVP candidate, and they had a great graphic about the shortest MVP winners, and I believe he would be the shortest since Joe Morgan.
Joe Morgan, yeah, I was going to say. Joe Morgan, who I worked with for a number of years, who was a phenomenal player, was 5'7". But that's also 43 years ago.
Right.
Guys are a little bit bigger right now. But not to take away from what Joe Morgan did. But, Jose Altuve might be 5'6". Mookie Betts is 5'9", 170. Jose Ramirez is like 5'9", 175, 180, I believe, somewhere around there. And that's one of my favorite things about baseball, is that great players come in all shapes and sizes, that you can have, a 6'7 flamethrower, going against you can have Chris Sale at 6'6 going against Jose Altuve at 5'6. And you know what? It's an even matchup. And that doesn't always apply in other sports, but it does in baseball if you've got enough skill.
You know, you talked about Justin Smoke a little earlier, Justin made a couple of terrific. He made a couple of his usually the Justin Smoke terrific plays that I think sometimes we take for granted at first base, not just that throw, but a couple of snags, throw from Yanervis Solarte that it wasn't spectacular, but it required a nice touch around the bag. It required all the things Justin Smoke brings to you. You know, I look at this team. Here we are. What is it? August 10th or whatever. And you know, we are trying to find silver linings. But I've seen nothing out of Justin Smoke that doesn't suggest to me he can't be my first baseman next year. As a matter of fact, I would. At his salary, I'd try to get him signed an extension, to be honest. Devin Travis, we're having him on Baseball Central 12:30. I was scared this guy's career was over earlier this year because I just didn't think, with the injuries, given where this team was, he's not one of this organization's guys. I thought, okay, maybe they lose a little patience with him. But those two and Randall Grichuk, from what I've seen of them, out of this mess and all this stuff that's gone on, the ability they've shown to raise their games over the year, Danny, makes me think that, they deserve to be part of whatever starts next year, at least initially.
Yeah, I agree with you. Justin Smoke, I believe as of now, would be due to make $7 million next year, but I think there's like another escalator clause of plate appearances, and he'll hit it, so I think it goes to $8 million. It's not my $8 million to spend, although indirectly I guess it's all of ours to spend, given the bills we pay every month, but absolutely. I don't think there's any reason to consider anything other than Justin Smoke being your first baseman for at least 2019. Like, who knows, maybe one day Guerrero moves across from third to first. Maybe Gurriel's a first baseman. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's 6'4", who knows? I think Smoke's at first base. Grichuk has been terrific for 2.5 months. I mean, he had a miserable April, and he'd be the first guy to tell you that. And people got way too down. People who had never seen him play before got way too down on him. I don't know. What he's done the last 2.5 months is better than what he typically was with St. Louis. He's always been kind of a hot and cold kind of guy. And if he can sustain what he's doing since the 1st of June, they've got a really, really good player because he can run the bases, he can play right, he can play center, he's got a good arm. You're in the clubhouse, Jeff. He's got a positive attitude. He's a good guy, and you and I both feel they need all of that they can get. So I agree with you. And I agree with you about Devin. The tricky thing for Devin, I think, is that he's a one-position guy. And, the way baseball is with such a short bench right now, like Travis is either your starting second baseman or how does he fit in? Because everybody wants versatility. Solarte can play two spots. Gurriel, who knows how many spots he may be able to play. But I'm really happy for Devin Travis. Quick side note, I did a thing a couple of days ago with Angus Mugford, who's the director of high performance for the Blue Jays, like a season ticket thing before the game, Q&A. And I asked him, I said, they do mental performance and physical and all that stuff, everything. Mm-hmm. I said, who's the toughest player on this team? Who's overcome the most? And he goes, that's like asking me which of my children I love the most, which I thought was a good line. I said, okay, but tell me which one you love the most. And who's the toughest guy? And I thought he might say Pilar.
Yeah.
32nd round pick, serious injury, always, has played through injuries. I thought he might say Stroman, coming back from the ACL early. And he said Devin Travis. He said what Devin Travis has been able to do, not to take anything away from Pilar, Stroman, or anybody else, but what Devin Travis has been able to do to get back on the field and become an everyday player again after the severity and number of injuries that he's had has impressed him maybe more than anything else. And I'm thrilled for Travis that he's back on the field. And it sure looks like the more he plays, the better he plays right now.
To go back to Smoke, and you make an interesting point there, Jeff, and I know we've talked about this and you've talked with Kevin about this a number of times about protection in the lineup and what the lineup's going to look like next season with Vlad Jr. there and whether you need another bat. Has Smoke sort of done enough where you don't have a Donaldson this year and you don't really have Morales hitting the way that the Jays thought Morales might be hitting when they did acquire him? where those two guys, Vlad Jr. and Smoke, might be able to feed off each other and sort of protect one another in the lineup.
They might be, although I don't think, I don't think Guerrero's on the opening day roster. I think he's up 2-3 weeks later or something like that because of service time, and we've gone over that a lot. But I don't think they stick him in the cleanup spot as a 20-year-old. I think they start him off lower, and if he does well, they gradually move him up. I don't think they want to throw him. You know, he's going to get, a lot of stuff's going to come at Vlad Guerrero pretty fast next year. You know, guys like me and Jeff bugging him every day. I mean, he's going to be a huge hyped story, obviously. So, but if he does well and if they move him up, could he be the three hitter and Smoke the four hitter? Sure. Mm-hmm. I think they could, but I think part of it also has to do with who's the two and who's the five. And one of the things I've thought is interesting, and not necessarily in a great way, about the Blue Jay lineup this year is you can look at the lineup and say, okay, he's hitting second, but you know, he could be the number seven hitter, or the number nine guy could be the number five hitter. Like, they don't have guys who stand out that much. They have a couple of guys who are hot and a couple of guys who are cold. But we've seen Teoscar Hernandez hit 1, 2, 4, 6, 7. We've seen Grichuk hit all over the lineup. We've seen Travis and Solarte, and you get my point. I mean, they've got a lot of kind of average guys. Their overall numbers this year are average. And I think, yes, I think that Guerrero and Smoke could eventually be the 3-4, but I think who's 1, 2, and 5 really matters. And I don't know who 1 is. I don't see a leadoff hitter right now in the organization, or at least at the top level of the minors. But if Travis can be healthy and hit in the 2 spot and be really productive, and maybe if a guy like Gurriel becomes the 5 hitter because he's got power and the ball jumps off his bat, you know, Travis, Guerrero, Smoke, Gurriel, eventually 2, 3, 4, 5. I kind of like the look of that, but that depends on a ton of things. How Vlad does, how Gurriel does Travis stay healthy, and on and on. But I think one of the nice things is at least we're looking, you know, names have popped up. Back to your point, Jeff, names have popped up that are now, we think, going to be part of the future that we didn't necessarily know a few months ago would be part of the future. And I think they've got more options and more bodies available to them now than maybe it looked like they would.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the things that you really want to see in this final 8 weeks, or I guess 9, 7 weeks now, if you're the Jays, and one of the things I'm going to be really fascinated on is to see how Randall Grichuk finishes out the year. If he goes on a bit of a spurt, we all know the type of hitter Randall Grichuk has been. We think know the type of hitter he is going to be. But, you know, I had somebody with the organization tell me there's also a sense that there might be a little more out of Randall Grichuk than what we've seen so far. Maybe the average can be just, you know, he's just a tick higher than what we've seen from Randall Grichuk so far and through his career. And I just find him, a fascinating player to watch because he does so many, there are so many things he does, Dan, where he's the best player on the team doing it.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I think he's got upside. His career or his batting average the last 2 years with St. Louis, I believe, was in the neighborhood of .240.
Right.
Now, it's not quite that high now, but I think you almost have to write off April. Mm-hmm. You know, he had 2 injuries in the spring, and then he's getting acclimated to a new league and a new team and probably putting pressure on himself, and he gets out of the gate 6-for-67 or whatever it is. So I don't know if he's a 300 hitter, but if he can hit 260 or 270, you're talking about not everybody's 260 is the same, obviously. If he gets 550 to 600 at bats and hits 260, he's going to stumble into 35 home runs. Like, the power that he's got is absolutely unbelievable. And again, I think the outfield play, the base running, the attitude, these are all good things. They need more of all of that. And I think the Blue Jays, obviously, they understand they've had a lot of one-dimensional guys, and they need more athleticism, youth, speed, and not necessarily steal 40 bases a year speed, but a guy who can go first to third, second to home, first to home on a double, that sort of thing. So I'm with you. I tend to talk about him a lot on broadcasts I do because I find him really intriguing. And he to me, like, if you're looking at guys on this roster right now and saying who is definitely a part of the future, he's on the short list. Gurriel's on the short list. I think Baruchy is on the short list. And these are all good developments because I don't know that any of those three names would have been names we'd have been saying on April the 1st or April the 30th even. So I'm with you. I think he's in a good place, and I know the Blue Jays are, having talked to various executives about the trade, they were thrilled to get him, and I think they're even happier now than when they made the deal.
Yeah, and you've got, what, another 2 years out of Pilar at center, so I could see Grichuk sliding into the center field. It seems like he's tailor-made for that position, isn't he?
I thought he played a really nice center field when Pillar was out, and having done a lot of Cardinals games during Grichuk's time there. Grichuk started 106 games in center field 2 years ago. Like, he's not just a guy. I think he's more than a guy that you can just, oh, he can fill in when the, you know, when the regular guy's hurt. I think he can legit play center field. So the Pillar situation, it, to me, is going to be very interesting. And I think Kevin will be back next year, but you never know. I mean, a guy like Tapera, a guy like Stroman, a guy like Pillar, you know, guys with a couple of years of control left. I don't think the Blue Jays are, you know, desperately trying to move these guys, but if they get the right offer, maybe they do. But I think right now, given that I don't see a ton of help on the outfield front in the high minors, my guess would be is that Hernandez, Pillar, and Grichuk, left, center, right, is the starting outfield for next year. But, yeah, I think it's possible at some point Grichuk transitions into the Blue Jays everyday center fielder, but we don't know how the, you know, how the front office feels about Pillar beyond this year at this point.
And then the Tampa Bay Rays will come into town for three games starting tonight. You know, the Red Sox are here. We know the Red Sox are running roughshod over the entire division, and I mean, we certainly saw firsthand in this three-game series what they're all about. But, you know, in a lot of ways, I think this might be if you want to break down the series, I think these three games against the Rays are probably going to be more telling for the Blue Jays front office than anything else, because the Red Sox are, you know, as I said, they're running roughshod. The Yankees, we know all about the Yankees. I just think everybody's sleeping in Tampa Bay. And, you know, Tampa Bay seems to me, Danny, to be about, they're about where the Blue Jays would love to be next year at this time. I mean, if the right. Jays are where Tampa is right now, a year from now, it will have been a hugely successful year.
Yes, leaving aside the whole opener and all that stuff.
Sure.
But I
right.
agree with you. Yeah, they're a little further along, I think, in their prospect development because, well, they have to be given their payroll. So, you know, when in doubt, make a trade. And they finally traded Archer, and they get Glasnow, who the Blue Jays will see this series. And they get Austin Meadows, an outfielder I really like. You know, they traded Longoria. They traded Odorizzi. You know, they've traded a bunch of guys because if they're not going to be in it, the only decision they can make is unload and regroup and try to win next year. And I've got a feeling that in 2020, 2021, we're going to wake up one morning and go, whoa, these guys are really good. And I think they're getting there. But they can't afford really to make any mistakes. You know, they can't spend a lot of money on a guy and have him be a bust, because that can hurt the whole franchise for 2-3 years. But the Blue Jay, you know, this is the first time Tampa Bay's come to Toronto this year. It's August, what is it, 10th today?
Yeah.
And this is the first time the Rays have come here. The Blue Jays and Rays still have 13 games left against one another. So the two teams are going to get sick of one another. But I agree with you. A little bit of it is symbolic. But I think the Blue Jays, you know, need to go out there and at least be competitive and show maybe they're better than Tampa Bay, even though their record isn't. But for me, the overriding factor over the next 7-8 weeks is who's part of the future. You know, like, we'll see Pannone at some point. Maybe we'll see Sean Reed Foley at some point. Maybe we'll see Danny Jansen at some point. Gurriel will come back. And it's, to me, it's just about building blocks, who's a part of it and who's not.
And one guy who looks like he's part of it, Dan, is Ryan Borecki, who, now, second time facing Boston, it looked like it was going to be the first time where I think he only lasted three innings, but he battled, didn't he? And
yeah.
Did he show you anything in just a matter of, you know, Gibby said that the control wasn't there, and the fact that he was still able to go out there and, like I said, battle through the order, I think through five innings. Did that show you anything more?
Absolutely. I mean, this is the best team in baseball, and his command was way off. It wasn't even close. And I think Borecki would be the first to tell you that. But what they love about him more than anything is his ability to adapt and his ability to battle, and that is he never panics out there on the mound. His heart rate stays low. Like, if you flip on the TV and look at Ryan Borecki in the stretch or about to throw a pitch, you have no idea if he's up 8-0 or down 8-0. And this is a young guy, 24 years old, 8 starts into his major league career, and to me, it's just about, you know, get the sign, execute the pitch, do it again. You know, wash, rinse, repeat over and over and over again. And I think they love the intangibles. And I do think last night was a good start, although it says 4 runs in 5 innings, because, you know, his command was not great at all last night, and he kept them in the game against the best team in baseball. And I think he's learning start by start, and I think he's, you know, tinkering with his location. He's tinkering with his slider. He's learning that his changeup is good enough to get major league hitters out. And I'm not sure he's ever going to be a guy who's going to, you know, win an ERA title or win 20 games. You know, I don't know that, because the stuff doesn't jump off the page, but I think he's got everything you need to have a nice, long, successful major league career as a starting pitcher. And those guys are hard to find. And I think he's really impressed a ton of people with the Blue Jays this year.
Danny, we'll let you run. Appreciate you doing this. I will see you down at the ballpark tonight.
Thanks, Dan.
See you around the cage.